Hello and welcome to the Forbes India Cover Story podcast series in association with theindicars.com. My name is Abhishek, and this cover package is around what the recent slowdown in the tech sector means for SaaS outfits and how they are managing their cash flows. SaaS firms are those, as you know, offer software as a service for a fee every month or every year. And joining me to talk about it is Forbes India's Harichandan Arakali, who's been writing about technology for a while. Hi, Hari. Thanks for joining in.
Hi, Abhishek. Nice to see you again.
Thank you. So first, can you paint a picture, Hari, of, you know, what do the SaaS outfits that you've covered, how did you select them? And also, generally, the slowdown in the West, what does it mean to them? Because bulk of the customers also come from that part of the world, at least for a couple of outfits that you've written. How does the slowdown, how does that impact these outfits in Bangalore or Mumbai and places elsewhere?
The premise that I went with was very simple. It's always been that way in a sense, but I wanted to look at Indian software service companies now kind of perfecting what they call as, I mean, the fancy word is playbook of building software in India and then selling it primarily in the US. So this is increasingly how it's the ecosystem is evolving. If you look at companies like Zoho, for example, it looks like they're all now at a stage where, you know, traditionally they would have served smaller businesses with their software. And now they're increasingly serving some of the biggest companies in the world. You know, even think of like Fortune 50 kind of companies. So on the one hand, I picked a small cohort of companies like Zoho, Freshworks, Capillary, those three, to illustrate how some of the more established companies were going after what they generally call their mid-market and up-market segment. It can typically be anything from customers with 250 all the way to thousands of staff, and in some cases, millions of their own end customers. And the other set of small startups that I wanted to spotlight were the lesser-known startups that many people may not have necessarily heard about, but which were doing very, very interesting work. And we can talk about that a little bit more. The second part of your question, the slowdown is definitely affecting them. One immediate thing was that most of them spoke about how there's now a lot more pressure and sense of urgency in terms of focusing on revenue, showing investors a path towards profitability and so on. So they are taking steps. The ones who are doing well, even in the current so-called funding winter, are managing to get subsequent rounds of funding as well. And we have a couple of examples in the amongst the companies that we covered there as well. So that is sort of the simple idea, just to highlight the fact that they are increasingly perfecting this playbook of building in India and selling to the world.
It wasn't too long ago when we had discussed about how unicorns were reigning in India. I think that was barely a couple of years ago. And now the conversation has moved, such as the speed with which, at least in whether in the West or here.
Actually, there are very few who make profits in the pure sense right now.
Right.
And amongst the larger companies right now, I think Zoho is probably the only company that is turning a good profit. So yeah, how they're tackling it is, again, and that's sort of at the heart of what they're attempting to do. Through the whole sort of history of the development of the Indian IT services industry, and then over the last, say, 10 years, because of the impact of companies like Zoho and others, there is a sort of critical mass of good talent available in India to build software. So they're able to build... I mean, if you leave out maybe the, if you call it an outlier of 2021 and that those kinds of periods where there was a lot of money and, you know, people are being paid enormous salaries, etc. If you leave out those kinds of years, now you can build at sort of an India cost, quote unquote, and then sell in dollars, right? And so the in the US and in the other richer countries, they will have more of a so-called go-to-market. Again, that's another industry jargon that I learned reporting for this. So they'll have some go-to-market specialists in the rich countries focused on marketing and sales and some other experienced folks. But much of the costs will be in Indian rupees. So I think that's one way of how they are trying to build their business models. I think over a period of time, for many of them, that would pay off. And also they are attacking some interesting problems, building solutions around tough problems where, you know, if they they've shown that they have some early success. If you look at the cohort of small number of startups that the lesser known startups that I wrote about, Pando, for example, is doing some really interesting work in logistics, fulfillment, SpotDraft, another early stage company doing, again, very interesting work in automating contract management, legal contracts management. So they're tackling some very interesting problems.
These are the companies where they are trying to solve a problem where the alternatives are either way too expensive or very manual, whether it's contract management by, you know, contract lifecycle management automation by SpotDraft or Freshworks trying to use harness AI to try and respond to, you know, customer queries and the like, right? Because how are these different from, you know, because you've also covered TCS. I know we are recording this today because you had to cover the quarterly results of TCS not too long ago. So how do these SaaS companies look at these problems differently as compared to the bigger ones that you've covered over the years?
Yeah, so the immediate difference is that the large companies like Infosys, TCS are services companies. They make money by selling services.
Yeah.
Whereas the SaaS companies are software product companies. So they make money by selling their software. Mm. So, I mean, albeit, of course, these days the model is you rent it off the internet, basically. I mean, to kind of oversimplify that, right, their model. And so, interestingly, companies like TCS, Infosys, these are also some amongst the system integrators who are partnering a Freshworks, for example. So you might have a TCS implementing a Freshworks software.
Right.
For a customer.
Hmm.
So that is the kind of way things are developing. Startups are coming up.
And how's the interest among the investors today as compared to what it was a few years ago?
Over the last 3 to 4 years, certainly the number of deals and the volumes and the money that's being flowed into the sector has increased phenomenally. And even the more sort of granular level, you know, what is an average seed check, for example, or what is an average Series A? That also, I think, you know, things have changed. Typically, those have become bigger. In the last 1 year, especially, I mean, during the now the so-called slowdown, not so-called, now during the slowdown, what has happened is that based on the few investors that I also spoke with while reporting for this story, and one or two of these investors, which I didn't include in this package, were, you know, some stories which were already published earlier. The consensus is that they are first looking at their existing portfolio of SaaS companies, and that I would imagine that is true of other sectors too. This is not specific to SaaS. And the reduction in funding and reduction in number of funding deals in the SaaS sector also reflects the slowdown. Like in other sectors, it has come down quite a bit. But like I give you the example of Pando or a SpotDraft, these companies have shown that they have gone way beyond the so-called product market fit. And they have won acceptance from very large customers. And then if you take Pando, for example, you know, they've got customers like a Johnson & Johnson. They've got customers like Nestle, I think. You take another company, Unravel Data, which is actually mostly a Silicon Valley-based company, but, you know, Indian founders and a lot of development happening out of India, which is a Series D-funded company, a recent Series D funding. Capillary would be a very interesting way of wrapping up, because in many ways, they're amongst the first-generation startups. They actually came close to doing an IPO in India a couple of years back, and because of the with the macroeconomy change, they've deferred that plan. They made an early foray into the US, UK, etc., more than 10 years ago, and then decided that it was not working out, and they came back and focused on India, Southeast Asia, these kinds of markets. They did very well. And now, in the last 3 years, they've again gone back to expand their operations in the US, and this time they're doing phenomenally well. They're also very aggressively making very targeted acquisitions of specialists in the US market, especially. Even today, I mean, Anish, the founder, one of the people that I spoke with, talks about how they are largely an unknown name in their area, which is the loyalty management technology. But their technology is great, and they have found local specialists, whom they have acquired, who will now give them the credibility in front of their US customers, because those local specialists have been established businesses for a very long time. I think Hal Brierley is one very good example of how they're doing that. So very interesting story of how the way they have approached going back to the US market. And that was another example of how this whole India to US, software cross-border pollination is happening that I wanted to capture.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Hari, for your time on this podcast. And thanks a lot again.
Thank you, Abhishek. Nice speaking with you.
Thank you. All you listeners, you can get this podcast on ForbesIndia.com or any other app that you use to download your podcasts. And to have someone call you for a Forbes India subscription, message Forbes to 51818.